What's up, you guys? Sean Ross Sapp, FightfulSelect.com, NXT AEW review, the last for now. I started to drop this show kind of impromptu a few months ago when I wasn't able to kind of get through an hour and a half on Wednesday nights immediately after AEW and NXT. I had some health stuff going on, had some personal stuff going on. But with Warren stepping away from Fightful, I will be returning to anchor the AEW NXT Wednesday Night War show on Fightful. Programming note, we usually get started at 10 p.m. Moving forward, we will be getting started at 10:30 p.m. We will try to go about an hour. It will be a little more succinct than in the past. That is not a hard and fast rule. I've mentioned this on shows previously. NXT AEW stars often tweet about watching that show. They'll send me feedback and a lot of stuff like that. They'll respond to things that we talk about on that show. So if you guys aren't checking out that show, please do that. It's going to have a bit of a renewed type of approach to it, a bit of a relaunch, and I want to thank Warren Hayes so much. I will again as we do that show next week, but I want to thank him so much for the 2 years that he put in at Fightful, over 2 years that he put in at Fightful. I had some of my best chemistry on air with him, and he's going to continue doing great stuff on his own channel. So please continue to support him. I think a lot of his work and a lot of his ability as an analyst. So make sure you guys continue to support Warren Hayes. If you guys are longtime subscribers of FightfulSelect.com, I mean, back when we were sitting at 100, 150 subscribers, I mean, he was a big part of that with the midweek show and covering a lot of the things during the weekender now. So a big thank you to him. Also, a big thank you to WWE for tonight's show. Man, that was a lot of fun. The zombie thing, not for me, but let me tell you, the Halloween Havoc stuff, God, I loved it. I loved the ring ropes being orange. I loved the orange tape on the ladders. I loved the decorations. I loved the big-ass pumpkin. I thought it was so cool. I often complain about NXT looking a little bit too much like Ring of Honor. Dark, everything's the same. Ring ropes, ring mat, ring skirt, mats, barricade, background. It's all darkened out. Tonight looked different, and it still had that dark type of feel, but it was a Halloween aspect. Why wouldn't you keep doing this if you are NXT? Why would you not adopt things like Halloween Havoc? Keep picking up things like the Great American Bash. Why wouldn't you do it? Go beyond that. Go beyond that. Take Spring Stampede. Take Slamboree. Take Starrcade. You know, I don't know which of these Cody owns the trademarks to and which he doesn't, but take all these. I mean, I've been at a Starrcade. They've done them the last 3 years, 2017, 2018, 2019. I was at Starrcade 2018, and I only went to that show because it was Starrcade. Otherwise, it was going to be another WWE house show. I went because it was Starrcade. So maybe you're more likely to get somebody to tune in because you're doing NXT Starrcade than if you just do NXT that week. Shotzi was over the top and corny, but I thought it fit for tonight, and it was a good time. They spin the wheel, and it's a Devil's Playground match for the North American Championship. Man, I don't see how nobody else sees how much Damian Priest gets it. The body language. Man, he exudes charisma and cool, and it is effortless in his actions and his motions and his moves. And this match ruled. Johnny Gargano came out in a Jack Skellington jacket, and later on, you had Candice LeRae as Sally. So it was the Jack and Sally aspect from Nightmare Before Christmas. A really cool little nod there. At the end of this show, you had Johnny Gargano hit Priest with a tombstone after someone in a Scream mask, a Ghostface mask, attacked Priest. And they knocked him off the platform into the floor below. A great spot. And Johnny won the North American Championship and became the North American Champion. Now, I don't know who was under the Scream mask. I did hear, and this is just a rumor at this point, I heard that Indy Hartwell was supposed to be on this show, and she couldn't appear on this show. Can't say that for certain, that should be treated as a rumor, but that's what I've been led to believe. I don't know if that was supposed to be her role there, but that was a really great match, and I love watching these two do work. Throughout the night, we see Cameron Grimes meeting with William Regal, ahead of his Haunted House of Terror match with Dexter Lumis. This was not for me. Yeah, it was not for me. I think Cameron Grimes is very funny. I think Dexter Lumis plays this very well. Like Cameron not, or him being frightened by a deer head and being like, I've seen bigger ones. That was pretty funny. But the scene where he tries to get into a shower with who he thinks is Dexter Lumis's sister, that's weird for more reasons than one. But then they bring zombies out and they give chase to Cameron Grimes. And the zombie thing is just not for me. It's just not for me. Dexter Lumis ends up chasing him all the way back to the arena, to the ring, and puts him in the silence and beats him. Sure. It's for somebody, I think. But the thing is, I'm not like, oh my God, this is so stupid or anything. Because it was Halloween themed. I've seen far dumber things in wrestling than this. It just wasn't for me. Pat McAfee comes out and he cuts a promo that really insulted the internet wrestling community, which I hate that term. Everybody's got the goddamn internet at this point. And Pat McAfee can deliver a good promo. It's just this one felt like it went on for quite a while. And they talk about how he linked up with the guys who took out Ridge Holland, and that's Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch. And he said that he paid Ridge Holland to attack Adam Cole, and if these guys were tough enough to take out Ridge, they were good enough for him. But then Kyle O'Reilly comes out, and he's coming to gain a measure of revenge on the people that attacked his buddies. And he's got Pete Dunne with him, and Pete Dunne is on that Kalisto workout plan, my friends. Man is jacked. Very rarely do I ever think that physique matters that much in wrestling. Improving your physique can help an awful lot in wrestling, and you better believe that's what Pete Dunne did. My God, he looks like a star. He looks like such a star. Before he did this, I saw him as like really good wrestler. Okay, that's cool. Now I'm like, all right, this can be NXT's Taz. I always loved the term that Vince McMahon used, the sawed-off monster, so to speak, because I don't think that was denigrating. And Pete Dunne is not 5'10". I don't care what lineup says he's 5'10". He is not 5'10". But you know what? I believe he can beat ass well above his height. And he turned on Kyle O'Reilly here. They all beat him down. This was good. This is a big shot in the arm for NXT. They needed to make this happen. You know, good to see Pete Dunne getting some experience as a producer over at NXT UK, but he is an NXT wrestler. He is worthy of that marquee. They needed some fresh names as well. So I like this. They stomp Kyle's arm, and then they do the elevated DDT onto the chair. This was a great angle. Great angle. Santos Escobar comes out. He is in Rey Mysterio Halloween Havoc 1997 tribute gear. I loved it. I got a little bit emotional seeing it because, man, that's one of the best matches I've ever seen in my entire life. Escobar got a quick win over Jake Atlas. You know the drill. That's fine. Let me tell you about one I loved. Maybe the first ever Sirloin Beef Sons of Bitches women's match I've seen in WWE. Rhea Ripley and Raquel Gonzalez built this match up for a long time, and they beat the snot out of each other. They delivered. This match kicked so much ass. This was two women going in and hitting big moves and big strikes and heavy elbow drops and beating each other up into the barricade and clotheslining each other and elbowing each other and power bombing and kneeing each other. There was a tease of an avalanche riptide. This was awesome. Rhea eventually won with the riptide. God damn, this was good. This was just one where they were slapping. They were slapping. In as Big E said, big sweaty men slapping meat. This was tough, sweaty women slapping meat. That's what this was. I mean, got to go with quality on the sirloin beef sons of bitches here. Rhea Ripley is the biggest 5'7" person you will ever see in your life. That woman fights at 6'2". How is she just 5'7"? I believed watching her that she was every bit of the 6 feet that Raquel Gonzalez was. And you know what? A credit to Raquel Gonzalez. She's been there for so long. She debuted around the same time as Thunder Rosa. And needless to say, they did not progress at the same rate. Thunder Rosa was put on TV very early. Raquel was not. I mean, she did like the Battle Royals and all that stuff and did the Mae Young Classic. But it was clear she was not ready. That woman is ready now. She's ready to go. And this was just, this did her and Rhea Ripley all kinds of favors. This is the kind of thing that got Rhea Ripley over. Not having her come out and cut those promos where she sounds like an Australian Road Warrior Hawk from 1990. Well, I guess if you're going to face somebody, it might as well be me. No, that doesn't get her over. Her beating the living shit out of people gets her over. Her existing and looking like a badass, that gets her over. That got her over. Good on Raquel. Good on Rhea Ripley. I've got nothing but great things to say about them and this match. I got nothing but great things to say about the booking, the agenting of this match. This was exactly what it needed to be. Violent. With a definitive, clean ending. No shenanigans. You know who isn't hurt one bit by losing? Raquel Gonzalez in this match. She lost to a woman who was NXT World Champion. Ain't nothing wrong with that. You'll win some, you'll lose some. I love this. Drake Maverick dressed up as Hulk Hogan. He is sandwiched between somebody who is dressed as the Giant and the Yeti. He gets dry humped, and I would be lying if I said that I didn't laugh. And if I told you that I didn't laugh, you all would know that I was lying, because most of you know exactly how I am. I did laugh. It was funny. Killian Dane dressed as the Shockmaster was also funny. I liked it. It was harmless. It was thematic, and I can appreciate that. We get a graphic for Velveteen Dream versus Tommaso Ciampa next week. Ember Moon versus Dakota Kai next week. Those are a couple of real good matches. Tommaso Ciampa says that he does not recognize NXT anymore. Yeah. Winds of change are upon us, buddy. Got to adapt the times. I'm sure he will. I got to see something new out of him, though. Hopefully we do. He's so good. Spin the wheel, make the deal. It is a tables, ladders, and scares match. NXT Women's Championship. Io Shirai, Candice LeRae. Io Shirai wins. This is unreal. This is so good. This was an amazing episode of NXT. Damn near perfect. Besides the cinematic match, which I didn't care for. Like, there was this amazing double neck breaker. It wasn't a double neck breaker. Candice did a swinging neck breaker off the apron through a couple of tables. These tables smashed exceptionally. It was really, really good. A lot of ladder spots as well. Eventually, the person with the mask runs and grabs Candice and pushes her up the ladder. But Shotzi comes out and takes out the ghost face. And Io ends up knocking Candice off the ladder through another ladder outside and wins. God, this ruled. Women's wrestling, in particular, on this Wednesday night was so strong. And let me tell you, wrestling in general was really strong on this Wednesday night. But it made me so happy. There is so much women's talent out there right now. Not even signed. An abundance. There was just so much great stuff here tonight. So much good stuff. I can't say enough about this NXT show. Again, the zombie shit, not for me. But even down to the Santos Escobar, Jake Atlas squash, I just thought this was an unreal episode of NXT. I thought that NXT needed a solid base hit down the line to stay competitive here. And I thought they hit a triple. Almost hit a home run. If not for the zombie thing, it would have been. But it's a triple that knocked in three runs, if you know what I mean. They destroyed it tonight. They were amazing. This show, from the decorations to the wrestling to a lot of the creative, really, really great. I loved it. AEW kicks off with MJF and Sammy Guevara having words, and this was really, really good too. MJF says that Sammy Guevara looks like a guy who sells Adderall to middle schoolers. Oh, Jesus. Dasha was interviewing MJF, by the way, before Sammy interrupted and said that he's going to make sure that MJF doesn't join the inner circle. Later on, we see the town hall, and I don't know how many people caught it. I don't know how many people even give a shit about politics, but they had Reba emulate a woman who, like, not even half-assed, hit on Donald Trump. And I thought that was funny as hell. I like to keep up with the world events, and that was so ridiculous. Like, when it happened, you watch it and you're like, oh, Jesus. But then when they emulated it, I thought it was very funny. You had Luchasaurus come out there. I'm legit so over hearing about his goddamn master's degree. But then Eric Bischoff popped up. I like that. But MJF says that he's going to do whatever it takes to join the inner circle. And also Peter Avalon got laughed at for wanting to be in it. But Chris Jericho says, okay, how about beating me? And MJF said, okay, we'll do that. So they got a match, and I think that's pretty cool. Ortiz and Sammy challenged MJF and Wardlow to a match next week, and I'm excited for that. I liked the town hall. I did. I'm not going to say it was like an amazing segment or anything, but I liked the town hall. It was different, and they've done so far this year with Chris Jericho, steak dinner, song and dance, town hall, debate. I liked all those things. I enjoyed them. They were a different setting than the traditional old talk show, old promo, all that. And I'm excited to watch MJF face Chris Jericho. I love it. Tell you what else I loved. If Rhea Ripley and Raquel Gonzalez needed someone to compete for the meat slap, and Wardlow and Hangman Page did just that. Wardlow continues to be impressive. I really thought he should have won this tournament, and you could actually set up for something with Hangman Page and Omega down the line based off the fact that they didn't make it to the finals against one another, and maybe they cost each other the titles, yada, yada, blah, blah, blah. You know the drill. You know how that works. Come on. So Hangman won this, and he won it with a couple of buckshot lariats that destroyed Wardlow, but there was a gut-wrench powerbomb that Wardlow did that it just looked so effortless. And he did a swanton, or he attempted a swanton, rather. This guy just gets it. There are little things that he does, too. Like the way he puts pressure on shoulders on a pin, even when they're lazy. When he pins every single time somebody's back is on the mat. I'm really liking it. Page wins. Later on, we see Kenny Omega defeat Pentagon, who has replaced Phoenix. And this is, of course, a great match. My issue with this is the result here was never in doubt for me. It was a lot more in doubt, actually, for Wardlow and Hangman Page than it was Kenny Omega versus Penta. Because Penta just lost in this tournament. So I probably would have flip-flopped those or put Cody and the TNT title in the main event. Penta and Omega was a really good wrestling match that was just that. And it had stakes, but to me, the stakes were almost minimal because we knew there was no chance that Omega was going to get beaten by a guy that they just had lose last week. Whether or not it was in a great match. Love seeing the One-Winged Angel still booked incredibly strong. This was a heavy contrast to last week's match, but I do want to say, I'm glad they kept this match as is. Penta should be kept. competitive. Because when booked right and when motivated, he can do some really, really incredible things. I just think there was more intrigue in the possibility of Wardlow beating Hangman Page than vice versa. Even if it was because Kenny Omega would run in and cost him the match or something like that. Cost Hangman Page the match, rather. So I would have swapped those. And both incredible matches. Sean Spears hit VSK with a C4 for a 3 count. I saw a lot of people dunking on Sean Spears. I don't get it. I think he's good. I think he's serviceable. And why not? His angle last year with Cody was really good. I mean, that's what I want to see, is him used better, and he's being used better here. After the match, Scorpio Sky is throwing stuff at Sean Spears and hits him with a TKO. Got an interview with Scorpio Sky coming up next week on Fightful.com. John Moxley video package airs, and he talks about making the AEW title the number one prize in wrestling. I like that you don't have to have this guy on TV every single week. You don't have to do it. You don't have to have him like live there doing a match or doing something like that every single week. You build because people want to see him. The fact that he's not there all the time makes you want to see him a little bit more. Eddie Kingston defeated Matt Sydal. So hear me out. Eddie Kingston was also always going to win this match. Always going to win this match. I would have really liked, instead of Eddie Kingston coming out and him saying, him questioning why Moxley wasn't there and calling him a coward, do all that. He'll do all that, and it makes sense that he would want to beat up a guy like Matt Sydal, because Sydal came in and got a lot of attention about the Casino Battle Royal. But if I were Eddie Kingston and that character, I'd be like, you know what? I'm a week and a half away, but I'm going to show I'm not a coward like John Moxley. If you beat me, you get the shot that I've been fighting for. You get the shot that I want. And then he beats Sydal. And here's the thing. You know he's going to win it. The result isn't going to be in doubt, and that's going to be the case with most matches in pro wrestling. But at least you add a little bit of something to it, and that adds to Eddie Kingston's character as a result. Now, after this, he held Matt Sydal in a bulldog choke until he said, I quit, because they have an I quit match. I also don't know if I would have had an I quit match so soon after the Roman Reigns, Jey Uso one. I'm not big on when companies have things in such close proximity like that, but you know, that's a minor nitpick. Otherwise, I liked this a whole lot. I also liked a whole lot Young Bucks and FTR interview. FTR keep on getting on Excalibur, who's there with the Bucks doing the interview, saying, oh, that's your buddy, that's your buddy. And they get really peeved and they end up leaving. And they're upset that Excalibur isn't asking them questions because that's the Young Bucks' buddy. The Young Bucks add that if they lose at Full Gear, they'll never challenge for the AEW World Tag Team titles again. Now, last year, we saw this stipulation put forward and executed by Cody. I like that it's happening again this year. I think it should become a tradition. Why not? There's a little bit of intrigue you can add to a match on this show every single year. That's not something I would have thought that would become a tradition, but it already has, at least the first 2 years, so why not make it a regular thing? You can do it with the women's title, you can do it for the freaking FTW title, even. You can do it for anything. And I think the Bucks should win. This is probably my favorite thing that the Bucks and FTR have done together since this feud started. The execution of this feud has been really underwhelming and, quite frankly, abysmal. From the weird belt shot a couple weeks ago to the reveal of Tully. Oh, my God. That was so weird. But this was good, and they needed something good. And they need something good next week, too. Team Taz, they're still recruiting Will Hobbs. They just want to know if he's with them or against them. Kip Sabian and Miro apologize to best friends. Then they attack him. Miro says he'll never forgive them. Okay. Lumberjack match. Ooh, I like this. This would have been so much better if Orange Cassidy just didn't get that title shot against Brody Lee. Because he should not have gotten a rematch that quickly after Brody Lee. It should not have happened. when he walked out there and was like, ah, here I am, ready to challenge Cody. I'm like, bro, why? And this was Orange Cassidy's third failed attempt to capture the TNT title in a month. In a month, bro. So I can't see him competing for this title anymore. Or at least for a very long time. He's very good. He's a good character. I think they sort of burned out the audience a little bit. Or at least the audience of one in me, they did. Because if this just wouldn't have had that Brody Lee match, it would have added a lot more. Because I knew that the guy that just lost to Brody Lee and just went to a time limit with Cody was not going to win the title. I'm sure that he will win a pretty significant title at some point, but this wasn't it. There was some great work here. Only thing I don't like, people piling, waiting around on the dive, holding their arms out. The Lumberjacks end up attacking one another. That led to that big superplex spot to the outside where everybody did have to catch. Now, John Silver ran in the ring and attacked Orange Cassidy, and I don't know if Cody saw it, but he threw John Silver out and then beat Orange Cassidy with his finish. And now we're going to get Orange Cassidy versus John Silver on the buy-in, which I think is fucking awesome, man. John Silver rules. Orange Cassidy is fun. But that was a very clever way to do that. Give Cassidy a little bit of space. Give him an excuse to lose. You wonder, did Cody see it? Did he not? That was really cool. A very different interference finish that benefits three different people at once. It gives two people a program. It gives one person a win. You don't know if the person that won, who is generally a babyface, saw what was happening. This got a lot of wheels in motion. It was not your typical distraction pin. Wow, so I've ended up talking about all the matches. So basically the main event of this podcast is Serena Deeb and Layla Hirsch. And Layla Hirsch is great. I loved seeing her work here. I loved seeing her take on Hikaru Shida last night on Dark. And Serena Deeb is the new NWA World Women's Champion. I cannot believe that this woman went so long without wrestling. And especially in a period where women's wrestling was so hot. And I mean, it still is. Don't get me wrong. But she's 34 right now. And I'll say this every time. She missed a solid 6 years. She missed basically from the time she was 28 to 34. Those are the prime years for a women's wrestler. And then she's stepping out and she's saying, no, 34 to 40 is looking like a prime years for me. I am a fan of amateur wrestling, so I really loved the sit-outs from Serena Deeb that were countered by Layla Hirsch going around the world and keeping that front face lock, keeping that turtle position. That was excellent. Layla Hirsch is one of this pretty large class of female wrestlers that is out there on the independent circuit. Kylan King, Trisha Dora, Jody Threat, Alley Cat, the C-Stars, there's a bunch of them. You got about a dozen independent women's wrestlers who are either TV ready or close to TV ready right now. And it's very healthy right now. I don't know that I've seen a more stacked, just premium, ready-to-go indie group of women than what we got right now. And I'm talking like a lot without significant national television exposure, which, as we know, can be important. The aura of homegrown, so to speak, is integral. Serena Deeb won this match. This rule, go out of your way to watch this. Hikaru Shida, after the match, was talking with Alex Marvez. Yeah, the AEW Women's Champion is on this show sometimes. She challenges Nyla Rose to a match at Full Gear. And I'm just sitting there thinking, okay, well, that's interesting, because I haven't seen Nyla Rose on Dynamite in a real long time. Last time I saw Nyla Rose on Dynamite was September 9th, maybe. She beat Tay Conchi. Before that, it was July. It was fucking July. since the last time that Nyla Rose competed in a title match, which was at Double or Nothing in May. She's had 8 matches. 8 matches. She had several on Dynamite. She had one in May, one in June, one in July after that. And then boom, August, September, October, 1 match on Dynamite. Why can't you go out there and have her do something like what Shawn Spears did? How many times do I need to see this woman beat the shit out of Kylan King? Because I've seen it 3 times. And I'm tired of seeing it. Why her a title match? Because she's there? Now, I'm not saying that the woman, Nyla Rose, is not worthy of being in a title match. She's proven that she can have really fun title matches. Really good title matches. I'm saying from a booking perspective, she's worked 1 match in the last month. 1. They got to do better. They got to do better. They got to have somebody realistically who is next, who you believe could win the title, as opposed to a factory. Well, that's it for the SRS NXT AEW review. Reminder, next week, 10:30 p.m. Eastern, the Wednesday Night War. I will be guiding that show. It will be a little bit more succinct than in the past. I'm very excited. Until next time, guys, thank you all for supporting this show. And don't you worry, there is plenty more coming to FightfulSelect.com. We're out.